The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
It is not time for the Sanderson Ford poll question. It is time.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Jordan, you going to find yourself for that? No answer. No. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. There you go.
That's $2.
He just had to find the soundbite.
Right.
That's all.
Just give him a little extra time.
Just give him a little extra time to find the soundbite. Yeah, it's $2 for playing the wrong thing. That's fine. 4 o'clock reset here on the Burns and Gambo Show. What we do at 4 o'clock every day, we hit the reset button, get you caught up on the top stories of the day. The Diamondbacks are not able to complete the sweep here from Chase Field, which is where we are losing a game to the Pittsburgh Pirates by a score of 5-4. Zach Greinke, 4 2/3, 5 hits, 5 earned runs, 4 walks, 7 strikeouts. His ERA is now 3.87 on the season. He's 5-5 on the year after the Diamondbacks dropped this one 5-4, despite the fact they had a tying run on third bases, with 2 out in the ninth.
Bases loaded, 2 outs. Jake Lamb went 0-5 today. And batting average down to 209 for Jake Lamb. By the way, Alex Avila got a pinch hit opportunity today. Hit into a double play. So Alex Avila, batting average down to 118. How low can you go?
Paul Goldschmidt and Jake Lamb combined to leave 9 men on base in today's game. But, as we say, the series win is what it's all about. The Diamondbacks got the series win. They've won 4 of their last 5 series now and open up a 4-gamer against the New York Mets, I believe, starting tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's a disaster of a team. The Mets are awful. I mean, they even talking about having to trade one of their star pitchers right now to get some help, either DeGrom or Syndergaard.
Sam Darnold is making a very strong impression with the New York Jets, and in particular their offensive coordinator, who says we are throwing everything at him, and so far he has not flinched. Quote, if he can handle it, if he can prove that he's the starter, then that will take place when the time comes. Close quote.
Well, they're even saying that he could start the season opener if he continues to quickly pick up the offense, that Sam Darnold could start the opener for the Jets in week one. Now, we were talking about Rosen and whether he could start if, some things happen with Bradford, but they are thinking that Darnold could have a shot at being the week one starter for New York.
But our top story of the day today on the Burns and Gambo Show is the continuation of mandatory minicamp for the Arizona Cardinals and the continued lack of participation for David Johnson. Once again, he was not out there today. We're not expecting him out there this week, but, you know, it kind of requires almost an official check-in just to make sure, hey, he's not here today? Nope, he's not here today. Tomorrow's the last day. If he's not there tomorrow, then we will not see David Johnson or any of the Cardinals players in a football uniform on a football field until July 29th. So it either happens tomorrow or we wait the rest of the summer to find out if David Johnson is going to miss any training camp or not. He's going to hold out or
you
not.
Know, I get reports every now and then. I mean, there are a lot of guys that are looking good right now. Keep your eye on this this Vanderbilt wide receiver, Sherfield. He has been turning a lot of heads. Kimdichie looks excellent. Rosen and Glennon both look real good. Ricky Seals-Jones is playing really well. Jamar Taylor has been impressive. So there are some guys playing well, but it's all overshadowed by the fact that David Johnson hasn't been there. And everybody wondering, how long is this going to last? Will this go into the preseason? Will this go into the season? Will he report? Will he play for $1.8 million? Will the Cardinals strike a deal? So there are a lot of questions. David Johnson is arguably, you know, if not their best player, one of their best players, a guy that they need, if they want to win a lot of football games.
One of their three or four most important players.
Sure. Yeah, maybe. I mean, look,
easily.
Maybe the most important.
Arguably the most important.
Yeah, so the fact that he is holding out and not participating is of concern because we don't know how long it's going to last. We don't know the end game here.
Larry Fitzgerald gave his thoughts today, not only about Josh Rosen and Sam Bradford, but about the holdout of David Johnson. And he said, look, I'm always for my teammates.
I don't know the details of it. Honestly, I don't know. Anything that's going on, but you know, I'm always for my teammates, man. I love my guys, and I just leave it like that.
So, not wanting to say too much, but at the same time, wanting to acknowledge that he, you know, stands by his guy and he stands by his teammate. Kent Summers this morning on AZ Central had a really interesting point. We kind of talked about this a little bit yesterday. This Cardinals organization, David Johnson, they haven't had a player skip minicamp because he wanted a new contract in a long, long time. Kent went all the way back to 2009 when Darnell Dockett missed some time, when Anquan Boldin missed some time because they both wanted new contracts.
I thought you were going to go back to Andre Wadsworth.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, well, that was back in the days when, when every single first-round draft pick always missed time. And that was – look, we judge this Cardinals organization by two different eras, right? Kind of pre-Michael Bidwell and post-Michael Bidwell. In the post-Michael Bidwell era, they haven't had a lot of this. They haven't had a lot of trouble. And really, in the Steve Keim era, the post-Michael Bidwell era, they really haven't had a lot of players skipping mandatory minicamp. The Cardinals have been, and here's my point, and it was Kent's point too. The Cardinals have been very good. Steve Keim has been very good about recognizing the contracts that are coming up and dealing with them well before it ever gets to this. Should David Johnson have trusted Steve Keim to do the same thing in his circumstance? Did he jump the gun a little bit by sitting out of minicamp?
I don't know if it's a... No, I mean, I think you want to make a statement that you're serious.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think that makes that makes a statement. I don't know if it's a trust thing. It's just, I'm serious. I want a new contract. I don't want to play for $1.8 million. I'm going to show you I'm serious. I'm not going to participate. So I think that's what it is. I mean, because you go out there and you participate, they might not think that you're serious. So you got to in some way tell them that, hey, this is real. Like,
yeah.
I really am not happy. You could say it to them, but if you show up and you participate in everything, they'll think everything's okay. You know, so I mean.
Well, they'll know everything's not okay, but they will think that you're not prepared to do anything about it, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure Steve
right.
Keim knows not everything is okay with David Johnson, whether he's on the field or off. They know. But by not being out there, it shows that you as a player have a willingness to do something about that fact. Steve Keim has such an impressive track record of not letting these things become distractions, right? Not letting these things become problems, that I can't help but wondering if David Johnson should have trusted the guy through which someone who's earned a lot of trust. Steve Keim has earned a lot of trust that, hey, I'll do the right thing. I'll take care of you. Look what I did with Tyrann Mathieu. Look what I did with Patrick Peterson. Look what I did with Chandler Jones. Look what I did with Carson Palmer. Look what I did with, you know, all the guys who were worthy of getting...
What if he's not going to?
Well, that's...
What if he's not going to?
That's the loaded question now. What if Steve Keim is not prepared to do the right thing by David Johnson and is looking more at the right thing as he thinks it applies to the Arizona Cardinals?
There is a lot of precedent. I was looking at something that Bill Barnwell retweeted. In 2007, NFL teams spent an average of $6.8 million on running backs versus a cap number of $109 million. That's 6.2% of the cap was spent on running backs. Last year, $7.5 million was spent on running backs per team versus a cap number of $167 million. That's 4.5% of the cap. So proportionately, it's gone down.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a 30% drop in resource allocation to the running backs. You had $167 million on the cap. Now you're spending $7.5 million on a running back. In 2007, you had $109 million on the cap. You spent $6.8 million on a running back. 30% drop. The running back position is one where the smarter teams take a guy for 5 years. Like, and a great example they used was the Colts. Had Marshall Faulk under contract. When it was done, they went out and got Edgerrin James, ran his contract through 5 years, let him leave to go to Arizona, and then got Joseph Addai. Like, the way to do it is get your 4 or 5 years out of the guy, get everything you can out of him, and then draft another guy. It's a lot easier to don't pay a running back,
sure.
Draft a running back. Get 5 years out of him and then move on and draft another one.
And that kind of leads to my other point. Maybe David Johnson has a reason not to trust Steve Keim on this issue. Maybe David Johnson has a reason to believe I'm not going to get taken care of the way Steve Keim is typically taking care of guys. And not that Steve Keim is doing it maliciously. He's not. Steve Keim is, at the end of the day, a football personnel guy. He looks at those same trends you are. He knows. Steve Keim is a very dialed-in, intelligent general manager. He understands the value of salary cap allocation and running backs and how much money you want to give them as it relates to the rest of the cap, league-wide trends. Steve Keim and his crew over there do a magnificent job of crunching the numbers. They understand. So maybe David Johnson, it's not about, you know, hey, you should just trust Steve Keim. He's always done the right thing. Maybe David Johnson looks at it and goes, based off of this information, based off of the value of the running back position, I have something to worry about here.
Sure.
I should be concerned that I'm not going to get taken care
of
here.
I mean, listen, if the numbers are going to be the same, whether they pay him this year the 1.8 and then tag him the next two, or they just give him $25 million in guaranteed money on a four-year contract, the numbers are the same. The only number that's different is the cap number. You could lower your cap number by signing them to an extension. So instead of paying $13 million on a franchise tag cap number next year,
sure,
if you sign him to a contract extension, you're going to pay him, you know, he's only going to count 8 or 9 against the cap. But the money's going to be the same. So would you rather have the lower cap number if you're the Cardinals, but you gain the risk of, hey, if the guy gets hurt, you're screwed. You got to pay him.
Right.
Because you guaranteed him
or
money.
Would you rather have the cap hit,
the security of the money,
but the flexibility of knowing I can get out of this
anytime
by
I
not
want.
Tagging him anytime
right.
I want.
David Johnson plays this year and gets hurt, tears up his knee, something happens. You don't have to franchise tag him next year.
Nope. And when it comes to trusting Steve Keim, Tyrann Mathieu trusted Steve Keim and got rewarded for it. He got a nice deal, but Keim protected himself.
But
and Keim protected the organization when he structured that deal the way he did to give them the out that they did. And I think most Cardinal fans were glad that they had that out.
Well, when he didn't play up to his capabilities or what the expectations were, they got out of the contract.
Yep. The Phoenix Suns are looking to move up with the 16th pick. What teams could they be calling to swing a deal to move up to that higher range in the lottery? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
It's the Chosen Sun Ultimate Draft Experience.
Here we go. Adam Kenner. K-E-N-N-E-R.
Trying to go 2 for 3 right here.
Yeah, we're...
With a base hit up the middle.
We're 1 for 2 so far on the on the week.
Adam Kenner?
Kenner. K-E-N-N-R. Kenner. Adam Kenner. You could be the Chosen Sun Ultimate Draft Experience winner. You now have 10 minutes to call us at 602-260-9870. 602-260-9870. You get to claim your 2018 Suns draft hat. You also qualify for a spot for the trip to the NBA draft. If Adam doesn't call within 10 minutes, we'll open up the phone lines and we'll give it away to caller number 10. But for right now, don't call because Adam Kenner has 10 minutes to call. 602-260-9870. He's got 10 minutes to see if he can win that. Adam Kenner.
Good trip. Head to New York.
Sure. Watch draft. Hang out with Bickley. Which you're outraged by.
Yeah, because, like, why is he going?
Chicago guy?
Yeah, like, it'd be said, like, hey, go hang out with Gambo in Chicago. Only well, I know about you. My daughter went to school
there.
I was going to say,
you know Chicago, though, because your daughter went to Loyola.
Okay,
you
know
about
it.
Adam Kenner, 10 minutes, 602-260-9870. You have 10 minutes to give us a call. Yesterday, Gambo, you shared with everybody the range in which the Suns might be looking to move up in. From the number 16 pick in the draft. Now, there's all sorts of options with number 16 stay. You gave us a list of names they could consider there if they stay, move up in the draft, try to trade your assets for more of a veteran player, which is something you and I both talked about we'd rather them do with all those assets. But if they move up in the draft, you mentioned the range of teams that they're looking to get to is somewhere between 7 and 12. Starting with Chicago and ending with the L.A. Clippers.
Sure. Looking for a player that may slide. Looking for a player that could slide, you know, out of the top six. And then, hey, can they jump up and get them? Do they have the assets using 16 and 31? And, of course, future first-round picks. They got Miami's future first-round pick, Milwaukee's future first-round pick. They've got their own future first-round pick. Do they have the ammunition to move up and go get a player that may slide a little bit, like maybe a Michael Porter?
You called around to see what the interest level is in those teams that are sitting there, 7 through 12. What interest do they have in moving down? Because, you know, it takes two to tango, as the old cliche goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So who's the dance partner
for the Phoenix Suns? I think if I had to pinpoint it, Charlotte doesn't want to move. Chicago is, from what I'm hearing, Chicago is pretty much intent on taking Kevin Knox out of Kentucky. Which, if you look at mock drafts, you'll see that he's nowhere near the top 10. But that's what I'm hearing right now, a week before the draft. Kevin Knox, the 6'9", small forward, power forward out of Kentucky, could go to Chicago at 7.
Can we hit the pause button for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. If he's available at 16, could that make the Chicago Bulls a trade partner? You know what I'm saying?
Could they move down?
could they move down if they really love Kevin Knox? And Kevin Knox,
you know,
the
only thing I'm told over and over again is don't trust the mocks.
Okay.
Because
which I agree with. Just because a mock
he
says
might be available at 16 doesn't mean that somebody's not going to take him at 11 or 12 or 13.
Sure.
Maybe the Clippers take him at 12 or 13.
That's logical. Makes sense.
I mean, so that's what it could be. So I don't know. I mean, that's a big drop. See, the thing about dropping, if you drop from 7 to 16, nobody. It's hard to – you're probably dropping for a player that, you know, that isn't a great player. You know, there's nobody to love or hate at 16. There's guys you like – that have a chance, solid players, but nobody's really moving down for that guy. I want to move down because I want this guy there. I think Knox is gone. If Chicago takes him there, they really like him. And they probably don't think that they can move down 7-8 spots and get him.
Yeah.
He'll probably be gone before that. No. So I think Chicago's out. I think Charlotte's out. I think Cleveland could be in play. I've heard I don't think so, that they... And then Philly, you know, I've heard that Philly wants to be a wheeler dealer, but they don't have a GM right now.
Hmm.
So that they would like to be a team that wheels and deals. Philly is picking 10th. They could be a team that makes some moves, but they don't have a general manager. So how do you know? That's a more difficult team to deal with. New York, they've sold their whole fan base on the fact that they're going to pick a player. So the chance for them to move back, I think, is slim. So I think you're looking at Philly. I think you're looking at Cleveland as teams who would have the best chance to try and trade with.
Yeah, look, I think something you said earlier when we talked about this before, quantity over quality.
Yes.
If you're the Suns, you have to target a team between 7 and 12 that values quantity over quality. And I think, just eyeballing it, and Kellen Olson on ArizonaSports.com had a really well-written story in which he kind of did the same thing. He looked at the teams from 7 to 12. He didn't call around the league like you did, but he kind of just looked at their assets and said, okay, based off of what each of these teams have in terms of draft picks, which ones are the ones most likely to want to move down and pick up extra picks because they just don't have very many? It's Cleveland. They don't have very many. They've kind of sold out the farm to go for it in the LeBron James era. And if LeBron James isn't coming back, they need a seriously big rebuild, and they need to do it now. What better way to do it than restock yourself with number 16, number 31, the Bucks pick whenever it conveys, maybe the Suns first-rounder next year. I mean, we talked about McDonough not wanting to give up the Suns' first-round pick next year. But if you have a chance to move up to, where's Cleveland picking, 8?
8th.
You're going to get potentially a very good player at number 8.
Sure.
That could be Michael Porter land right there.
Sure. I mean, listen, throw 31 out, okay? 31 is insignificant. Nobody wants it. Nobody cares about it. It's not something, you know, that matters in a trade. So 31 is garbage, okay? It really is. It's the 16th pick and the chance to maybe get a good pick. Now, you might say, you know, a team might say, listen, you've got Milwaukee's pick, Miami's pick, and your pick coming up. You know, you may want the best out of those three. Like, you may be put yourself in a position where I want to make sure I get the best pick possible. So you could try to figure that out and try to get the best pick there and put some limitations on, okay, if this pick is 1 through 10, I'll take it. If it's 15 through 20, I'm not.
Sure.
You know, so there are things that you could do like that to make sure you get a better pick.
Here's Ryan over the weekend talking about the things that he'd rather not give up.
I think you mentioned the Miami pick. Yeah, that's unprotected in 2021. That's extremely valuable. Our own pick, that's, you know, potentially valuable as well. We hope it's not valuable, but we'll know more in April about how valuable it is or isn't than today. I think... You know, it would take a lot for us to. We'd have to get a lot to give up, you know, one of those assets.
But you made a real good point yesterday. That's roughly akin to the car salesman who says,
yeah,
"Ooh, I don't know if I can throw that feature in. Let me go check with the manager in the back."
Yeah, you want to make it seem like that's such a valuable commodity.
Sure.
I don't want to give that up.
Oh,
of course, you'll give that up in a heartbeat if you can get Michael Porter.
Yeah,
you give that up in a heartbeat if you could move up to 8 and go get a player right there. That pick will probably be all those picks. You're hoping those picks are in the mid round, and maybe later. I mean, you know, Milwaukee might – that pick – is that going to be a top 10 pick? No. Is the Miami pick going to be a top 10 pick? Probably not. I mean, you don't know.
You don't
but
know. The Miami pick is dangerous to give up because you just don't know. You have no idea how good or bad Miami's going to be 2 years from now. You're doing that one kind of in the blind,
but if you could
right?
If you could get Porter, who I've heard comparisons to him, Kevin Durant – you give the pick up, even if it's number one or two. You just give it up. If you like Porter that much and you really believe that he's going to be a superstar. This kid was the number two or three best high school player in the country coming out. The injury, if it wasn't for the injury, he'd be a top three pick all along. But no, you know, without doubt, he'd be a top pick.
Yeah.
So if you believe in him that much, you give up them. You give up whatever pick you have to get him. You get Porter, you get Ayton, you go forward.
So you say you put the Miami pick on the table if it meant being able to move up to Ayton.
If you love Porter, if that's the guy, you don't move up unless you know. And that's why there's like, you know, the Suns are working guys out, setting their draft board, seeing where other guys may fall. You know, you kind of get a feeling on things like this. Like I could talk to different teams and say, okay, I'm hearing Knox is going to Chicago. Bagley's going to Sacramento. I start to piece these things together a little bit here and there. And I'm sure the Suns could do the same thing and try to get a feeling where certain guys are going. And then all of a sudden now you've got a better understanding of how the draft's going to go.
Gambo, we're 1-for-3. He didn't call in.
He didn't call in. I'm still batting better than Alex Avila.
You're still batting better than just about everybody on this team right now. It's not just Alex Avila. All right. Adam did not call in, which means caller number 10, 602-260-9870. You will be registered for the Chosen Son Ultimate Draft Experience. Caller number 10, you will be registered. 602-260-9870. Be listening tomorrow. 7:15 in the morning, 12:15 in the afternoon, 4:15 in the afternoon. For your name to be called and your chance to register. But for now, we will take caller number 10, 602-260-9870. Everybody, including himself, I might add, was wondering exactly what was wrong with Paul Goldschmidt. And now, Goldie has grown kind of tired about hearing at least one of the suggestions about what was wrong with him. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Chase Field with the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Let's get an update to our Twitter poll of the day. Let's send it back to the Auction Community Studios where Andy Greenberg is standing by with an update on that poll question.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
I think we're using the phrase on this one, need to know, a little liberally. Do you think, Andy?
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Just a little.
But I, you know, I want to know what the fans think about what they've seen play out and if their opinion has changed since the beginning of the season. Look, I'm going to defend my mistake.
It's fine. You know, the reason why we fall is so that we can learn to pick ourselves back up again.
Exactly.
As somebody once told Bruce Wayne in one of those Batman movies a long time ago. So, that being said, what is today's somewhat lame poll question?
Well, I might say then to go with this, with great power comes great responsibility.
Now you're going Spider-Man on
yeah,
me.
Now
you're crossing universes
DC
here.
DC and Marvel?
Yeah, be careful over there.
I'm not a Marvel guy. You guys always lose me on Marvel.
I know we do. Guardians of the Galaxy. That's Marvel. You love that movie.
I love Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's Marvel.
Because I like the movies.
Yeah.
And I like the I Am Groot kid. Yeah.
What's the poll question today, Andy?
Well, despite all the crap that I've gotten for this, we've still had over 1,300 votes on it. Who should be the closer for the Arizona Diamondbacks? 52% still say Brad Boxberger. 32% say it needs to be Archie Bradley. 5% say it should be Yoshi Hirano. And 11% say none. Trade for somebody. So just under half of Diamondbacks fans think that Brad Boxberger shouldn't be the closer anymore.
Well, I mean, if you want to frame it that way, you can. I would look at it and go 1 out of 10 Diamondback fans think they should trade for a closer. I look at this question, and I'm pretty sure Gambo agrees with me. If I were making a laundry list of things wrong with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah, that's not on the list.
That's not
man.
On the list. That's not
on the list.
I've had really no reason. Now, okay. In something that, to defend Andy a little bit on this one.
Oh, I'm not defending him at all. That was a terrible question.
Something that bears watching.
Yeah.
Diminished velocity out of Brad Boxberger.
Because he pitched 3 days in a row.
Diminished results the other day against San Francisco. Let's see how he does, but it's no reason to think they need anybody new.
Number one on my list is, why is Alex Avila playing? Played today, hit into a double play.
Why is Alex Avila playing today?
He didn't match the passion the first time you said it.
Yeah,
it's pretty, I imagine.
Were you there that day?
No, I was mercifully off that day.
I was mad. He played today, hit into a double play.
Yeah.
Gotta love Alex Avila. Is he out there right now?
I don't know. It's so we're up here in the right field area, and it's family day for the Diamondbacks today. And yes. I got to admit, this is pretty cool.
Family day. I'm
so, like, turn around and look. Yeah. The players are out there with their wives and their kids, and there are photographers walking around taking pictures of the Diamondbacks with their wives and their kids, and their bouncy things, and their dogs are out on the field, and the kids are playing catch with their dads.
You know, back in the day,
this is kind of cool.
Back in the day, you know, they had yearbooks. I wish they still did that. You'd get a yearbook. So you'd go to Shea Stadium or Yankee Stadium, and you'd get a yearbook. And like in the yearbooks that I used to buy in the 70s, you know, they would always have that. They would have pictures of when they had family day. So you would see Tom Seaver with his wife and two kids, or Bucky Dent with his wife and kids. And it would be like one of the pages in the yearbooks. Have you ever seen that?
No, I've never
I'm going to bring one in and show you.
Okay, please do.
I'm going to bring one in this week and show you, like an old yearbook from the 70s, what it looked like. And I wish they would sell yearbooks. I think people would go crazy for yearbooks.
Yeah,
bring back yearbooks.
Everyone's just having a dandy time out there.
Playing soccer.
Yeah, playing fetch with the dog. It's a load of fun.
Dogs are out there.
Paul Goldschmidt was not having a lot of fun up until about 10 days ago, maybe a little longer than that, 15 days ago, when he finally started hitting the ball. Goldie was a guest this morning on the Doug and Wolf show, and basically grew very frustrated over time with all of the people who were looking for something to blame for his woes. And in particular, the phrase tunneling, he thought people made way too much of that.
Yes, 100%. I think it's just a new term for some guys are already doing. It's just you're trying to get a pitch in a certain location, you're trying to hit it. I mean, it really wasn't any more complicated than that. And now there's a term that's been used to try to do that. So I think a lot of stuff in baseball is getting labeled now and quantified, and we were already trying to do that and trying to control it. And now it has a name, and now it's a bigger deal, even though most guys were already doing something very similar to that.
So he says, hey, look, it's a new way of dressing up something we've been doing in baseball for a long time, and it wasn't that big of a deal, and it certainly wasn't the reason why I had a really bad month of May.
Nobody thought that Paul Goldschmidt was going to continue about 200. You know, nobody thought that. I mean, eventually he was going to, you know, we talked about this, April, bad month, May, bad month. Okay, have a good June, have a good July. You know, I mean, he's not going to put up the numbers that we're accustomed to him putting up, but he could salvage the season. All right, so right now, you know, I'd have to look at his numbers, but, you know, he's hitting .258 with 12 homers and 31 RBIs. I mean, that's what he's hitting right now. So he's got .258 batting average, much more respectable, 12 homers, 31 RBIs. Is he going to bat .290 to .300 this year? Probably not. But we always thought that he could get the batting average up to .270, you know? I mean, maybe he can even do a little bit better than that. He's having a really good month. Have a good month this month. Have a good month next month. I mean, to me, that's really what it's about. And I'm trying to look at what he's projected, because I think even with the projections are going to come in really low on the RBI numbers. So his projection is that he's going to drive in 75 runs. That's his projection this year, that he's going to hit 29 homers and drive in 75 runs. Last year, he drove in 120. So 75 to 120 is a big difference.
Sure. A huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a guy that, you know, three times in his career he's drove in 100, and he had another time he drove in 95, so four times in his career he's been 95 or better. So for Paul Goldschmidt not to drive in a lot of runs, I think, with 240 at-bats right now and only 31 RBIs, is he going to get 70 RBIs the rest of the season? Probably not.
Yeah, but he insists, I'm not doing anything different now than I was doing in May.
I wouldn't say like I was fighting myself. It definitely looked like that, but, you know, for whatever reason, your swing gets a little off or you're not synced up. And I mean, there's a million different reasons. And then when you're going good, it looks like, you know, everything just happens so easy and smooth. And, you know, there's not like you just flip a switch. You're out there trying to do the same thing. I mean, I'm trying to do the same thing. Or in May, I guess I was trying to do the same thing I've done these last, you know, week, 10 days or so. And it just wasn't happening. And I mean, that's just part of the game. There's a lot of failure built in, and there's not like just the easy answer. And, you know, you just got to go through those struggles and hopefully, you know, they end and you can play better.
And I think that's the most important part. I don't know why Paul Goldschmidt had a lousy May. I don't know why the whole Diamondbacks team had a lousy May offensively. I don't know if we'll ever know. We'll have theories. We'll have ideas. We'll have, I think it was this, I think it was that.
But if you don't think that they were searching for answers, just like we were.
Of course, they were desperate for answers. Yeah, they traded for John Jay in June because they were looking for some kind of spark to this offense. I mean, they were looking for something, anything to make a difference. I think what matters is that it's over. Right? It's over, and it didn't kill
yes.
them.
No.
It didn't.
They're still in first place.
It didn't destroy their chances. Nobody got super hot around them and passed them. I mean, they briefly got passed by a game, a half game. They went through arguably one of the worst months a baseball team can, and it didn't hurt them at all in terms of are they in first place, are they in the lead in the division.
Well,
didn't hurt them.
You say it didn't hurt them. But don't we need to wait till the end of the season to see what happens? Because if they lose this division by three games, are we not going to look back at that bad stretch of baseball and say they lost this division in May?
Sure.
I mean, so
I'll give you that.
I mean, I think it's fair. Okay, if the Diamondbacks lose the division by two games, are we not going to look back? When did they lose the division? May.
Okay.
Remember when they couldn't hit and they lost all those games? They lost the division in May.
On June 13th, it's fair to say it didn't hurt them.
Yes.
On June 13th, it's fair to say nothing hurt. It's
right.
fine. They figured it out. They solved it. It happened. We don't know why. They worked to try to figure out why. It didn't hurt them much. But I would agree with you that on September 13th or on September 30th, whenever this season ends, that if they miss out on first place by three games, we will look back at the month of May and the 19 games they lost and say that's the reason why. That's where it was.
Sure. That's very fair.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Because we could say, man, if they just would have played 500 baseball in May, mm-hmm. then they would have won this division going away.
Yep. I would agree with that. So much of the attention has been on the Cardinals' quarterbacks. What about the guy they're going to be throwing to? How does Larry Fitzgerald size up the new quarterbacks on the team? He spoke about it today. You'll hear from number 11 next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Clubhouse Call-In with Burns and Gambo. Presented by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford. Proud partner of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Visit SandersonFord.com. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Every Wednesday we get the opportunity to talk with one of the Diamondback players, our Clubhouse Call-In segment, and I believe it was just about 10 minutes ago I saw our guest, Gambo, out on the field playing fetch with his dog, I think. Was that you, Archie? Playing fetch with...
Yes, that was in fact me.
It looked looking good. Looked like you're having some fun out there.
Yeah, you know, obviously not the way we wanted to finish the series. We wanted to finish today with a nice little sweep. But, you know, in our world, the way we believe, if you win series, you're going to be pretty good at the end of the year. So another series win, and now enjoy a nice little family day.
This looks pretty cool out here, Archie. I'm looking at all the guys. Granky's out there. All the kids are running around. Soccer balls, frisbees, dogs. Nice little get-together for all the families to go out there on the field after the game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we build up so much stress and just tension on the field. And even after a loss, it's nice to be at your home park and see, you know, a lot of my teammates, I've watched them become dads and grow up as dads and watch some of their kids grow up. And same thing with, you know, being able to have my dog and my girlfriend out there and things like that. Just to get everyone together and kind of, even though you're at the field, you're kind of turning the game off and enjoy a little family and relaxation.
Hey, I know you got into the Suns a little bit the last couple of years with Book. You really were a fan of Booker's game. You got an opinion on the first overall pick? You want him to take DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I haven't done my research like they've been doing. I haven't been working these guys out, but he seems like a pretty solid guy to go with. He's big, he's strong. I like his attitude. Like the quotes I read from him from his workout, and I think he'd compliment us pretty nice.
What do you think about about Josh Rosen? I mean, you're a former quarterback. You excited that he could be the guy, the future for the Cardinals?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, again, I'm not an NFL expert, but that's what every team is looking for, is that franchise quarterback, that one that they can latch onto and is going to, you know, lead them through the ups and downs of a season and be able to hopefully one day bring a championship to Arizona. And you're hoping that Rosen can do that, and I'm excited.
Yep. Archie Bradley, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, our Clubhouse call-in. Let's talk about your team for a few minutes now. With the series win over the Pittsburgh Pirates, that's, I believe, four of your last five. You guys weathered the storm in the month of May. Do you feel like you came out of that all right when it was all said and done?
Yeah. You know, it's still very early in this whole divisional race, and even talking about, you know, winning our division is kind of just pointless right now. But, you know, to take a step back and think that we lost 15 out of 17 games, and we're sitting here right now, you know, winning our division. I think perspective is everything. And if you can just look at that and like I said, take a step back and look at we're winning the West right now, despite that terrible month of May and despite, you know, that funk and losing streak we were on. We were kind of able to weather the storm, and now I think our best baseball is ahead of us.
And with reinforcements coming, I mean, Shelby's getting close. You know, Robbie's getting close. I mean, you're doing this without some key players. I mean, Suze has been out, you know, pretty much the whole year. So, yeah, you did weather the storm, and you got reinforcements coming.
Yeah. You know, and the guys that have filled in, Buckholz, we just got John Jay. I mean, kind of everyone, man. We've all, you know, we talked about it before, but that funk we're in, man, it was just kind of confusing all of us. We just looked around the locker room like, what is going on, you know? And we knew that the tide was going to turn, and we knew we were going to start winning games and playing good baseball again. And, you know, I think it was that mindset and that attitude of, look, it is what it is. We're injured. Everyone else is injured. No one's going to feel sorry for you. No one's going to make an excuse for you for this. So find a way to weather it and go win games.
Well, you know what? You used to see, you know, in baseball, you could see one, two, maybe three guys going bad. It was weird in May to see the whole team going bad. I mean, everybody was struggling. Nobody was hitting. It was the entire team. Hey, we're bringing up, is it information overload? Too much information? Is it the tunneling? Is it the humidor? I mean, it was everybody's trying to figure out an answer. I'm sure the players were too. Let's talk about the humidor. Have you noticed any different pitching in this ballpark with that thing in here now?
No. I mean, I don't know. For me, I'm pretty just it is what it is. Humidor, no humidor, wherever park you're at, whatever it is. At the end of the day, if the guy hits the ball and it goes over the fence, it wasn't a good pitch. So, you know, I'm sure it's held some balls up for both teams. It's kept some balls in the park for us for sure and probably done the same for them. So as long as it's equal playing field both ways, at the end of the day, the ballpark is what it is.
Archie Bradley, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. You guys not sneaking up on anybody at all this year, obviously, with the success you had last year. What is different with this team, if anything, compared to where you guys were a year from right now, where you had established yourself as one of the better teams in baseball, but people still weren't sure how serious to take it all? How are things different a year later with this team?
Well, last year we had a great mix of veterans and then young guys and then kind of a core that's been together for a long time. And going through what we did last year, winning and making the playoffs and then getting swept and just kind of the whole offseason of being able to evaluate and learn and then go through spring with essentially the same crew, you know, minus a few guys here or there. I think the thing this year is we're much more mature. We understand the ins and outs of the game and how things shake out during the game and how this one pitch with, you know, say guys on second and third and we keep this guy from scoring, keeps this game a tight game and allows our offense to go win the game now. Whatever it is, I just feel like from position one to position nine to every bullpen guy, we all understand these situations in the game and we're understanding why we win and how we win and how there's moments in these games that if we take advantage of them, you know, we're going to be pretty successful if we can do that.
You know, last year this team had an emphasis on catching and pitch framing and things like that with Mathis and Iannetta and Chris Herrmann. You know, we were all pining for John Ryan Murphy to get some more playing time because of his offense, because he was giving you guys some offense. But tell me what it's like, you know, to pitch to him. I mean, is he a good defensive catcher? Is he learning from a guy like Mathis? How's he coming along on the defensive side?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously hear me say this a lot, and nothing more true than the catchers. I mean, those three guys are about as tight-knit group as you can get. So regardless of who's back there, I know for sure that Matty and Avila both are helping John Ryan or are bringing him along. Not that he needs much. I mean, the guy caught in the Yankees, caught Mariano Rivera, and really he's never had an everyday spot to play in, and I think he's getting that opportunity. And for a guy like him, that's all he needed, and that's all he wanted was a chance to show he can do it. And I think you're going to see nothing but just continued success for him.
How upset were you when Paul Goldschmidt got hit in Colorado over the weekend, and did you want to do anything about it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the series is over with, so that incident's over with, but it definitely left a bad taste in all of our mouths. You know, intentional or not intentional, it really is besides the point. When you have a guy as well-groomed and well-mannered and goes about his business the way Paul does, doesn't celebrate homers, doesn't pimp them, The guy was just being Paul, and for that to happen in that game that late, for me, it's unacceptable.
You've been through some different managers. I mean, Torrey's a guy that he doesn't believe in it. Even though he played he doesn't believe in taking a baseball and throwing it as hard as you can and hitting somebody with it and the retaliation and all of those things. But other managers do. I mean, where do you fall in line with that? Because you've played for different managers here.
Yeah, I think I think there's a time and a place for everything. I do believe, that we are getting to a point where, I mean, hey, guys are throwing 100-plus miles an hour towards a guy's head. Like, that's not cool in my opinion. You know what I mean? The last thing you want to do is be responsible for possibly any guy's career or season, whatever it is. But then at the same time, there are these, whether you want to call them unwritten, written, just the way the game has been played. There's a certain line and order and a respect that you have to maintain for the game and for the players on the field. And when you cross that line, sometimes there's things that need to be done to show that and understand that those actions and the way you're acting is not acceptable.
Archie, thanks for the time. As always, we appreciate it. It was good catching up with you, man. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Look forward to it, guys. Take care.
All right, Archie.
Archie Bradley, Diamondbacks reliever, joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Quick Suns Insider Report.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Suns Insider Update.
We're going to flesh this out in a little more detail coming up in just a couple of minutes, but as Gambo has been talking about most of the course of the day, 7-12 is kind of the range where the Phoenix Suns might want to get up to in this draft. But as you've been telling us most of the day, a lot of those teams that are sitting in 7-12 in that range aren't really looking to get out. So the Suns might have a hard time finding a suitor there in a possible trade.
You might just need one. You just might need one, but it depends on what player you've targeted. Cleveland, possibly. Charlotte, no. The Knicks look like a no. Philadelphia, no GM. I heard they want a wheel and deal, but they don't have a general manager. So they are looking for a team to try to move up with, but they're definitely some of those teams that are very reluctant to move.
All right, much more on this coming up. When we come back, though, on the Burns and Gambo Show, according to the eye test, DeAndre Ayton is the best player in this draft. The numbers? The numbers tell a different story. They paint a different picture. We'll try to paint that picture next of what the Suns should do at number one here on the Burns and Gambo Show.